Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, August 20th. District theme is Reflection to Action. Ector County ISD's theme for the year is Reflection to Action. This will be a year of reflection for leaders and staff, accompanied by focused action, as the district updates its strategic plan, starting with the Board of Trustees establishing new goals. Reflection requires us to consider the work that has been done over the past several years, successes achieved, challenges that exist, and ways the school district can improve moving forward. Yet the real power in reflection is the behavior it improves, the district newsletter said. UTPB announces new vice president for athletics. The University of Texas Permian Basin, UTPB, announced Monday that Scott Larson has been named the new vice president for athletics. Larson becomes the fourth full-time director of athletics in UTPB's history, bringing with him a wealth of experience and a proven track record of success. We are thrilled to welcome Scott Larson to the UTPB family, UTPB President Sandra Woodley said in a news release. Scott's extensive background in athletics administration, combined with his commitment to academic excellence and student-athlete success, makes him the ideal leader to elevate our athletics program to new heights. His vision aligns perfectly with our university's mission, and I am confident that under his leadership, UTPB athletics will continue to thrive both on and off the field. A seasoned athletics administrator with over two decades of NCAA experience, Larson most recently served as the Director of Athletics at Black Hills State University in Spearfish, South Dakota. His tenure there was marked by strategic growth and increased community engagement. Prior to his role at Black Hills State, Larson served as the Director of Athletics at Lubbock Christian University, LCU, from June 2019 to August 2023, where he made a significant impact in the Lone Star Conference. I am incredibly excited to join UTPB and be part of the Falcon family, said Scott Larson. This university has a strong tradition of excellence, and I look forward to building on that foundation. My goal is to continue to develop an environment where our student athletes can succeed academically, athletically, and personally. Together, we will strive for greatness and bring pride to the UTPB community. During his tenure at LCU, Larson oversaw an athletic department that achieved three NCAA Division II national championships in women's basketball and 20 national championship appearances across multiple sports, including cross country and indoor and outdoor track and field. Under his leadership, the baseball, men's basketball, women's basketball, men's golf and softball teams made a combined 21 South Region, Central Region, regional appearances since 2015. In 2022-23, LCU reached a program-best 70th place in the Learfield Directors' Cup standings. Academically, Larson's influence was equally impressive. Student athletes at LCU consistently maintained an overall grade point average between 3.2 and 3.4, and a record 119 student athletes received the 2022-23 D2 ADA Academic Achievement Award. Capital improvements under Larson included the development of a new track and field soccer facility, a new tennis facility, and the installation of turf and a video board for the softball field. Additionally, he led efforts that increased season ticket sales, led to the creation of an athletics booster club, secured a licensing agreement for athletics logos, and developed an NCAA Division II compliance program from scratch. Larson's extensive NCAA compliance experience is noteworthy, having held positions at the University of South Carolina Upstate, University of Texas at El Paso, Northern Arizona University, Gardner-Webb University, University of Wisconsin, and Arizona State University. He also played a pivotal role in LCU's transition to NCAA Division II when he joined the university in June 2012. At the national level, Larson has been highly involved in NCAA committees, including appointments to the Student Athlete Reinstatement Legislation Chair, Compliance Think Tank Legislative Subgroup Chair, Transfer Portal Advisory Group, Board of Governors, Federal and State Legislation Working Group members for Name, Image, and Likeness, and Softball Regional Advisory Committee. He has also served as a member of the NACDA Executive Committee, NAAC D2 Committee Chair, and Division II Education Program Committee Chair. In 2019, Larson was honored with the prestigious NAAC D2 Excellence Award. Originally from Topeka, Kansas, Larson began his professional career as an undergraduate intern in the Athletics Compliance Office at the University of Tulsa. He graduated magna cum laude from the University of Tulsa with a bachelor's degree in business administration, with an emphasis in sports administration, and later earned his Master's of Business Administration, MBA, from Arizona State University. He and his wife Marla have two sons, Cade and Reed. Man accused of raping 14-year-old. A 34-year-old Odessa man was arrested Saturday after police said DNA tests confirmed reports he sexually assaulted a 14-year-old girl. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers learned on May 27th that a teenager had reported being raped, and when they spoke to her, she said Scott LaQuinn Johnson, 34, had assaulted her during the overnight hours of May 25th, May 26th. A sexual assault nurse examination was conducted, and DNA was obtained and submitted for testing, the report stated. The test showed the probability the DNA was Johnson's in 278 octillion times greater than it coming from anyone else, the report stated. Johnson was arrested on suspicion of sexual assault of a child. He was booked into the Ector County Jail on a $30,000 surety bond. Back to school immunizations. As the new school year gets underway, Ector County ISD wants to remind you of the required childhood immunizations. You can find those required immunizations listed on the Nursing Health Services webpage. Below are clinics that you can go to for vaccinations. Immunization information. School-located immunization clinics. Murray Fly Elementary, 432-456-5530, 11688 Westview, Odessa, Texas, 79764, vaccinations, DTaP, polio, MMR, varicella, hepatitis A, hepatitis B, Nurse Dawn, RN, Buies Elementary, 432-456-6348, 1800 East 87th Street, Odessa, Texas, 79765. DTaP, TDAP, polio, MMR, varicella, hepatitis A, hepatitis B, MCV4, meningitis B, HPV, Nurse Kristen, RN. Must qualify, Medicaid, no insurance. American Indian, Native Alaskan. Call Campus RN to make an appointment. Paperwork must be filled out by the parent guardian. Please bring a shot record. $5 per vaccine, cash only, no charge for Medicaid. Health Department Immunization Clinics, call for an appointment. Adector County Health Department, 221 North Texas Street, Odessa, Texas, 79761, 432-498-4141. Midland County Health Department, 3303 West Illinois Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79703, 432-681-7613. Andrews County Health Department, 208 Northwest 2nd Street, Andrews, Texas, 79714, 432-524-1434. Crane County Health Department, 106 West 5th Street, Crane, Texas, 79731, 432-558-7381. Monahans County Health Department, 405 East A Street, Monahans, Texas, 79756, 432-943-5559. Midland Habitat for Humanity dedicates 196th house in program's history. Midland Habitat for Humanity, MHFH, celebrated their latest homeowner August 15th with the dedication of its 196th home in the 500 block of South Lee Street to the Reyna Reyes family. Braving the brutal West Texas sun, friends, family, and future Habitat homeowners gathered to support the new homeowner. The Warren Charitable Foundation generously provided funding for the build. ProPetro and Ring Energy provided volunteers to help construct the home. Reyes worked over 250 hours of sweat equity, in addition to completing Habitat's homeowner college program with classes on personal finance, homeowner maintenance, civic engagement, health and wellness, and more. Habitat is incredibly thankful for the Warren Charitable Foundation and their commitment to Habitat and our mission of changing lives through affordable home ownership. We are also so proud of Reyna and the hard work and dedication she showed in getting through our program. We are thrilled to add another home and family to a growing South Midland neighborhood, Joey Hopkins, MHFH's executive director, said. At the event, Reyes expressed her thankfulness for the Habitat program. This home means more to us than words can express. We are overjoyed to start this new chapter of our lives in a place we can finally call our own. Thank you once again to everyone involved for making this possible for us. Your kindness and support have made a huge, lasting impact in both of our lives that we will never forget. MHFH is one of the premier institutions responsible for constructing affordable housing in the Permian Basin. The organization's partnership model offers deserving, hardworking families a hand up. MHFH uses a rigorous qualifying process that includes progress from the application through home ownership. Each participant contributes a minimum of 250 hours of sweat equity on the worksite and completes a home ownership education program. Successful candidates are then awarded a 0% interest mortgage, making home ownership a reality for some of the most deserving families in the Permian Basin. Anyone interested in supporting MHFH's efforts in the Permian Basin can contact Jeff Myers, Chief of Staff at 432-686-8877. For more information, visit www.habitatmidland.org or call 432-686-8877. Man accused of pulling butterfly knife. According to an Odessa Police Department report, an argument over dirty looks led to the arrest of a convenience store clerk on an aggravated assault charge Friday afternoon. Officers were dispatched to the Kent Quick in the 3600 block of West 8th Street around 4:20 p.m. Friday about a disturbance. When they arrived, a 30-year-old man said that when he pulled up to a diesel pump, a Kent Quick employee picking up trash gave him an unpleasant look, shook his head, and mumbled something, the report stated. The man said he confronted the employee and they began to fight each other, but then the employee pulled out a black butterfly knife, causing him to fear for his life, the report stated. According to the report, a witness corroborated the man's story. Officers discovered the employee, Nicholas Joe Velasquez, 30, had a black butterfly knife in his possession and an outstanding warrant for continuous violence against the family, the report stated. Velasquez was arrested on the warrant and on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He's being held without bond on the warrant and a $25,000 surety bond in the assault case. TxDOT issues traffic alert for FM 1788 at State Highway 191. The Texas Department of Transportation issued a traffic alert Monday for FM 1788 and State Highway 191. All left and right lanes will be closed on FM 1788, State Highway 349, at State Highway 191 beginning August 7th at 7 a.m. until 9 a.m. August 21st. Center lanes will remain open. Expect delays or use an alternate route. Fitch affirms city credit rating. Standard & Poor's Moody rating not reinstated. City of Odessa officials Monday announced Fitch ratings recently affirmed Odessa's GO bonds at AA outlook stable. A news release detailed Fitch Ratings is a credit rating agency and one of the big three credit rating agencies. The other two of the big three are Moody's and Standard & Poor's, which both withdrew the City of Odessa's bond rating last month, which could lead to the city having a much harder time obtaining financing for any future capital improvement projects. An email to Odessa's spokeswoman, Monica McDaniel, asking if there was an update to the loss of the other two ratings had a response of no. S&P and Moody's rate municipalities and other entities based on objective and independent analytical information and share that information with the marketplace. In this instance, both companies announced they withdrew the city's A-plus rating because they had insufficient or otherwise inadequate information to support that rating. That was due to the city not having completed the 2022 or 2023 audit paperwork. At that time, Odessa City Manager John Beckmeyer said steps had been taken to get the rating back and to ensure they're not withdrawn in the future. Economist Ray Perryman of the Perryman Group on Monday said, financial markets rely on all of those big three and expect there to be a general consistency. They are all similar. Most investors look at all of them, he said via email. Asked if it remains important for the city to restore the other ratings, Perryman said, it is. Absolutely. Financial markets rely on all of them. He said, once they are restored, there will be an indication in the records that they were removed at one point. In other words, the city will still have a ding on its record. Craig Stoker, who is seeking the city's at-large counsel thought against incumbent Denise Swanner, said the news about the Fitch rating was no great surprise, but bemoaned the blemish on Odessa's record. This probably could have all been avoided by not letting the new majority of council run off the city's top management and then replace them with folks who had no experience in municipal government. The city's new finance director has certainly faced a steep learning curve since she started and has risen to the occasion, seeing as neither she nor anyone on her team had municipal accounting experience. I am glad almost everyone can see that the problem lies above them at the feet of the council. Stoker said he looks forward to Odessa having a full creditworthiness restored and to having both the 2022 and 2023 audits available on the city's website. People are ready for a change, and I look forward to earning everyone's vote on November 5th. Mayoral candidate Cal Hendrick said the news Finch affirmed Odessa's IDR and GO bond at AA made him happy, but warned the news is not all good. Sophisticated investors look at all three credit rating agencies to judge the financial viability of a governmental entity. It is critically important that the city of Odessa complete its audit for 2022 and 2023 to enable the city to recover its lost bond ratings. Hendrick is challenging Mayor Javier Hoven for the seat in November's election. Hoven is in his first term as mayor. I am not a financial expert, but obviously financial markets rely on multiple data points and certainly all three credit rating agencies to judge the financial well-being of governmental entities like the city of Odessa. It is very important. Investors expect consistency. A lack of consistencies in bond ratings will downgrade the value of the bond. Thus, the city of Odessa's bond ratings are negatively affected by the Standard & Poor's and Moody rating removal. Hendrick said Odessa must have credit ratings from all three agencies. I am very concerned that most investors will not be willing to buy Odessa securities due to our loss of credit ratings with Standard & Poor's and Moody. Hendrick said if elected, he will strive to get the past due audits filled, as well as ensure all future audits are completed in a timely manner. But the citizens of Odessa must realize that even if Standard & Poor's and Moody restore Odessa's credit rating, there will be an indication of the financial records that Odessa's credit ratings were removed. In other words, the city will have a permanent stain on its credit rating and its financial reputation. The loss of the city's credit rating is inexcusable. Some have tied the loss of ratings to the loss of staff at the city during the last 4 years. The city council voted on December 3, 2022 to terminate city manager Michael Marrero and city attorney Natasha Brooks, and 1 week later, finance director Cindy Muncy retired. Zachary Becerril, the city's budget manager, submitted his resignation letter April 3, 2023, and director of finance Larry Fry retired effective May 23, 2023. Interim Director of Finance Seth Bowles resigned September 29, 2023, shortly after finishing up the fiscal year 23-24 budget for the city. Beck Meyer previously said that when he replaced Interim City Manager Agapito Bernal in August 2023, the first order of business was to prepare that budget. Bowles told him they were running a little bit late on the audit, but it was 80% complete, Beckmeyer said. After Bowles quit, he learned the audit wasn't that complete from the city's outside auditing firm, Weaver. 2 months later, the city hired a new finance director, Kaylee Banda, and an internal auditor, Kayla Hardy, and they began to work on the audit, he said. There was no paper trail, so we had to build it from the ground up, basically, and that's what's taking so much time, Beckmeyer previously told the OA. Perryman previously said the loss of their ratings was not unprecedented, but it only happens a few times a year. It's viewed as a substantial problem in the investment community, One consequence of this failure is that it will compromise the ability to raise capital for infrastructure and other public needs in the future, he said in July. Beer Run suspect arrested. Surveillance videos helped police identify a man accused of pepper spraying a convenience store clerk during a beer run Thursday. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a clerk at a Quick Track on Golder Avenue told police a man came into the store on Thursday, walked to the back of the store, grabbed several beers, and walked out. The clerk said he jumped over the counter to confront the man, only to be pepper sprayed in the face, the report stated. Still photos were taken from the store's video camera and circulated amongst OPD officers, and the suspect was identified as Michael John Gilmore, 39, the report stated. Gilmore was arrested on suspicion of robbery Saturday and booked into the Ector County Jail with a $25,000 surety bond. Woman stabbed, boyfriend arrested. A West Odessa man was arrested Friday morning after his girlfriend accused him of stabbing her. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, dispatchers received calls from residents on North Star who said a man was going onto property, stating the police were after him. When deputies arrived on scene, they learned a 35-year-old woman had been taken to Medical Center Hospital after being stabbed, the report stated. When they spoke with her, she said Zachary Villasenor, 31, had stabbed her. Deputies found Villasenor on Big Dipper, and he admitted to stabbing his girlfriend with a kitchen knife inside their RV, the report stated. Villasenor was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault causing serious bodily injury, family violence. He was booked into the Ector County Jail with a $125,000 surety bond. Teacher writes to nearly 1,000 colleges to promote AVID program. When Midland ISD announced plans to expand its AVID program to include 7th grade students at every junior high campus, A-Bell junior high teacher Ashley Bell knew she'd be the perfect fit for the job. As a graduate of the college prep program, she wanted to give the same hope, inspiration, and support to her students that she received when she was in school. There's another world and you can make something of yourself, she said in a news release. College is within reach for those who want it. AVID, Advancement Via Individual Determination, is a college readiness program that provides tutors, teaches study skills, and encourages students to pursue challenging coursework that will prepare them for higher education. The program is designed for students who need additional motivation to pursue higher education. Initially at San Jacinto Junior High, AVID is now available at every junior high campus, as well as South Elementary. After completing the AVID program at San Jacinto, then graduating from Midland High School in 2013, Bell became the first in her family to attend college when she enrolled at Sol Ross State University, majoring in kinesiology. She had planned to become a coach but fell in love with teaching when she returned to Midland ISD as a science teacher at Lee Freshman. Now teaching at A. Bell Junior High, Mrs. Bell was thrilled to learn that the AVID program would be expanding to her campus. This summer, she mailed letters to 987 colleges explaining the AVID program and requesting support. The colleges responded by mailing her college pennants that now fill the walls of her classroom, where they inspire her students to dream big.
Oil price roller coaster back in operation this week. That crude oil price roller coaster was back in operation with prices surging on concerns, winding Middle East tensions would curtail supplies, and then falling on signs supplies weren't threatened and of weaker Chinese demand. West Texas Intermediate fell 3 of 5 trading days on the New York Mercantile Exchange, opening the trading week by climbing $3.22 to $80.06 a barrel. Prices then began to retreat, attempted to regain their footing Thursday with a $1.18 rise, and closed the week with a $1.51 decline to $76.65, down from $76.84 at last Friday's close. The posted price ended the week at $73.13, according to Plains All American. Natural gas futures also fell 3 of 5 trading days on the NYMEX, with gains of 4.6 cents Monday and 7 cents Wednesday, offset by declines Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, 7.4 cent drop. Futures ended the week at $2.123 per MCF, down from $2.143 MCF at last Friday's close. The U.S. Energy Information Administration offered a mixed outlook for energy prices for the remainder of 2024 into early 2025. In its August short-term energy outlook, the agency expects crude oil prices to rise in the second half of the year, with Brent, the international benchmark, rising to between $85 and $90 per barrel by the end of the year. U.S. benchmark WTI is forecast to hover around $80 into 2025. According to the EIA's outlook, WTI could climb as high as $120 at the end of a 95% NYMEX price confidence and as low as $40 at the low end. Price increases are largely attributed to falling oil inventories. The EIA said it lowered its 2025 forecast for prices mostly because of expected reduced oil consumption. The EIA forecasts 2% less natural gas will be consumed to generate electricity in August compared to July. Because of falling consumption and flat production, the agency expects Henry Hub prices to remain below $2.50 per MMBTU through October. But the agency forecasts a ramp-up in consumption for heating as well as in liquefied natural gas exports from new facilities in Texas and Louisiana will boost the price to an average $3.10 per MMBTU from November through March. The good news for consumers is that lower natural gas prices will result in a marginal 1% increase in residential electricity prices and gasoline prices to remain lower this year into next year than 2023 levels.
Pfluger statement on Biden impeachment inquiry report. Congressman August Pfluger, Texas 11, issued the following statement on the release of the President Biden impeachment inquiry report. I commend the work of the U.S. House Oversight, Judiciary, and Ways and Means Committees to uncover the facts surrounding corruption in the Biden-Harris administration and Democratic Party. All Americans must read this report. Read the full report at tinyurl.com/YC62PF8E.
Drilling activity declines across the board. Drilling activity took a step back from last week's gains, falling for the second time in 3 weeks. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday its weekly U.S. rig count fell 2 rigs to 586, down 56 rigs or 8.7% from the 642 rigs active last year. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil also fell by 2 rigs to 483, down 37 from 520 rigs seeking crude last year. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas rose by 1 to 98, still down 19 from 117 rigs drilling for natural gas last year. Texas followed the national trend, dropping 3 rigs to have 273 rigs active statewide, down 39 from 312 rigs last year. New Mexico was unchanged at 107 rigs. Ohio 1 joined Texas as a major producing state to see a decline, while Oklahoma 2 was the only producing state to see an increase. The Permian Basin likewise followed suit, losing one rig for 303 rigs active region-wide. That's down 24 from 327 rigs counted last year. The Eagle Ford lost two rigs for the week. Eddy County, New Mexico remains the most active county in the Permian Basin with 52 rigs for a second week. Lee County, New Mexico remains second most active, continuing to report 51 rigs. Martin County had 31 rigs for a seventh week, while Reeves County had 28 rigs for a second week. Loving County was unchanged at 21 rigs, and Midland County was also unchanged with 18 rigs. Reagan County reported 15 rigs for a third week. Upton County reported 13 rigs for a third week. Howard County gained one rig for 12 at work within county lines. Mitchell County saw no activity this week with the loss of its one rig. Energy Dedicated Software as a service firm in Varis said its U.S. rig count rose one rig to 622 for the week ended August 9th. That's 83 rigs or 12% below the 705 in Varis reported last year. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil was unchanged at 199 rigs, down 223 rigs or 53% from 422 rigs a year ago. There were 87 rigs drilling for natural gas, up 3 rigs for the week, but down 92 rigs or 51% from 179 a year ago. ExxonMobil remains at the top of the list of top 10 producers by rig count, with 40 rigs, unchanged for the week. ConocoPhillips followed with 31 rigs, down one rig, and Occidental with 26 rigs, unchanged for the week. Invera said the Permian Basin had 305 rigs at work in the region, up one rig for the week ended August 9th, and down 36 rigs or 11% from 341 a year ago. The most active play, the Delaware Basin, gained two rigs during the week for 166 rigs, down 21 rigs or 11% from 187 a year ago. The Midland Basin fell two rigs to 116 for the week and is down 15 rigs or 11% from 131 a year ago. In terms of trailing 30-day drilling permits, the Permian had 694 permits as of the week ended July 26th, up from 681 the previous week, but below 730 a year earlier. The Permian had 121 active frac crews as of the week ended July 26th, up from 109 a week earlier, but down from 146 a year earlier.
ODC members hope for end to drama. It's been a tumultuous few weeks for the Odessa Development Corporation, but board members said they are determined to move forward with their mission beginning Tuesday when they elect a new president and vice president to discuss their budget. Within the last month, the majority of the city council voted to oust ODC President Chris Crow and Vice President Jeff Russell after accusing them of throwing up roadblocks that would prevent the city from accessing more than $80 million in sales tax money that is sitting in the ODC's coffers, and they argue could be used to improve the city's failing infrastructure. Mayor Javier Hoven accused Crow of preventing anyone from talking to ODC attorney Jeff Moore. Russell has defended Crow's actions, stating every time Moore spoke with anyone other than himself or Crow, it bred this nest of confusion. Hoven also accused Crow and Russell of maneuvering behind the scenes and treating the ODC as their personal, political, and economic organization. Hoven said they met with potential recipients of ODC funding without the knowledge of the other ODC board members, and gave instructions to an ODC attorney without the knowledge of other ODC board members or the city council. Crow and Russell contend the city council wants to illegally reallocate money, and they were roadblocks to be removed. In a press release sent out last week, the pair said they were working on behalf of Odessans to find ways for the city to address the city's infrastructure by legal means. Russell and Crowe said the ODC had planned to reallocate $18 million originally intended for the Nacero Natural Gas Project to the city's water infrastructure. Board member Melanie Hallman said she's saddened by what's been happening lately. I've been really proud of ODC's successful projects and what it can do to further our reason for existence, which is to incentivize capital investment in our area and increase the tax base in that way. From time to time, board members will disagree on the best way to achieve those goals, Hallman said. But I've been disheartened at what has seemingly become personal attacks and personal ugliness. I think it's disheartening, and I think it's distracting from our purpose and the good things that the ODC is able to do. She hopes the board will be able to disregard any distractions in the future. I think that it would be for the best if we, as a board and as an organization, would just really focus our attention on our mission and what we have been appointed to do, continue the work of adding good jobs to the area, assisting where we can with infrastructure, and hopefully incentivizing really good corporate citizens to make investments in the city of Odessa, Hallman said. I think that what ODC does is important, and I hope very much that we can move forward and focus our attention on the mission. Board member David Boughton agreed. I'm confident that we have enough skill set at the board level to continue to focus on economic development like we need to, and to be able to continue to grow jobs and grow the capital investment, have some positive impact on workforce and whatnot, Boughton said. I guess this is my nature, but when there are challenges in front of you, I just want to get focused on what's the mission and what's the best way to accomplish the mission. That's what I stay focused on. I don't think it's productive for me to focus on anything other than that. Board member Jay Kirk said he believes the board will be able to move forward with no further communication issues with the city council. What's at the heart of the disagreement of late is the different interpretations of Section 501.103 of the Texas Local Government Code. Hallman and Boughton said they can't recall any board discussions about redirecting Nacero money, but they do know the ODC board has discussed providing the city $30 million for infrastructure. They don't know if Crowe and board met with more without them. Boughton said he doesn't think the ODC board has had a good, substantive discussion about 501.103, although Moore went over the statute during a board retreat earlier this year and during a meeting earlier this month with city staff. The only other time he's interacted with Moore was when Moore was being interviewed for the job, Boughton said. Regarding the dispute, the attorney said this and somebody else said no. The attorney said this. I wasn't involved in any of that, Boughton said. In his opinion, that $30 million could be used for road projects, not water infrastructure, Boughton said. I think the road projects are probably going to be the easiest to identify as being eligible, and probably, you know, from an economic development standpoint, we're probably going to get the biggest bang for our buck with regard to accommodating new businesses, expanding businesses, relocating businesses and whatnot, which is obviously part of the economic development objective, Boughton said. If Odessa grows the way it's been predicted, businesses are going to expand and need more employees, Boughton said. That means roads will need to be extended. Our road infrastructure, in my opinion, is not adequate now, so it's even going to be more inadequate in the future. Maybe by using the $30 million for roads, the city will have enough money to be able to focus on other infrastructure needs, Boughton said. In her opinion, Hallman said whether sales tax money can be used for infrastructure will boil down to the facts of each project and will require discussions with Moore and the rest of the board. Crow and Russell alleged that when they tried to talk about Moore's interpretation of 501.103 during a June ODC meeting, city manager John Beckmeyer cut them off. The motive behind Beckmeyer's intervention has now become clear. The city council's intention is to funnel the bulk of ODC reserves into new development projects in Midland County, the men wrote. These projects could be in addition to over $10 million in grants already approved, supporting the ICA project, which will feature a Bass Pro Shop and the Bells Park Bells project aimed at constructing a new industrial park. Bout noted that part of Odessa is in Midland County and that part is growing organically. We've never had any effort to try to push one area of town or another with regard to expanding or relocating businesses or any of that commercial development, Boughton said. Businesses are looking for areas that fit their business needs, he said. There's been some projects that have been in Midland County, but in the city of Odessa, I've never had any heartburn over that because those employees typically are going to live in Odessa, and the city's going to, and the community is going to benefit by those expanding businesses and whatnot. A lot of those dollars are going to be spent in the community, so I don't really have much of an issue with that, Boughton said. Hallman agreed. I don't think that we can afford to ignore growth opportunities anywhere, whether it's in Ector County or in the portion of the city of Odessa that's in Midland County, Hallman said. All growth is important, and in every area we need increased infrastructure. We need increased service for our citizens throughout the city as well as the county of Ector. Board member Larry Robinson could not be reached. Board member Tim Harry said any statement he makes would have to come through city spokeswoman Monica McDaniel.
Water industry seen following same shifts as operators. Produced water is uncovered everywhere, and more comes every day. Growth in the volume of produced water has slowed, but is still one of the biggest challenges the energy industry faces, said John Schmitz, Chief Executive Officer and Chairman of Select Water Solutions. And the issue is not solely with the Permian, but lies across all basins, he told attendees at the Produced Water Society Permian Conference. His company's customers are focused on recycling and reuse solutions, but even if 100% recycled water is used in fracturing operations, Schmitz said there remains 5 billion barrels of produced water to manage. Schmitz told his audience the water market is shifting just as the exploration and production market has shifted. Public E&P companies are feeling the pressure to maintain inventories and are chasing the benefits of larger scale. He added post-merger companies tend to lower activity and the competition for investor attention is, quote, fierce, end quote. Likewise, the water market is shifting to commercialized midstream and further consolidation among water handling companies is expected. Quote, these moves come as water operators get stuck, feel the pressure to grow, and seek the benefits of scaled networks, end quote, he said. Systems, networks, and regional scope will give options to operators and water companies to use water outside the oil fields, he said. Mineral extraction will be a source of profit and stable cash flow as prices rise and the technology is proven, though that could take up to a decade, Schmitz said. Beneficial reuse of produced water outside the industry, on the other hand, will be technically, commercially, and regulatory viable in the next 1 to 2 years and will scale, he said. Select is targeting partial desalination of treated water, and the secret sauce is in pretreatment, technical assembly, and operations. The company is pursuing scaled pilots beyond lab scale, he said. Quote, water can fuel the energy transition, but we have to attract projects, end quote, he stated. A lot of new technology and advanced energy, hydrogen, green methane, natural gas, power generation, and carbon capture, utilization, and storage are trying to find their way to market, but the industry must work to be part of those efforts, he said. In the Permian Basin alone, he said, forecasts have the region seeing an 8% shortfall in water by 2030. Currently, an average of 13.7 million barrels a day of produced water is disposed of in the Permian. Quote, we're 13.7 million barrels a day long in a region that needs water, end quote, he said. Quote, put it all together and we can provide the 8% that's lacking. The industry can provide the solution, end quote. This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, August 21st, 2024. Midland Health. Randolph named winner of MMH's B Award. Midland Health is proud to announce that Stephanie Randolph from the Endoscopy Department has been awarded the B Award. This prestigious award recognizes exceptional individuals who embody the mission and goals of Midland Health through their outstanding patient care and unwavering dedication. Randolph, a patient care assistant at Midland Memorial Hospital, has consistently demonstrated an extraordinary level of commitment to her role. Her colleague, Ashley Chapman, nominated her for the award, highlighting her tireless efforts and compassionate approach to patient care. The B committee unanimously agreed that Randolph's contributions truly deserve this recognition. Quote, she carries on conversations with patients, providing calm reassurance while ensuring their safety, end quote, Chapman said. Quote, she comes to work with a positive can-do attitude and works hard, never sitting still. If she sees a need, she takes care of it if it's within her scope. She keeps things stocked and works closely with the nursing staff and other techs to make sure we have what we need. We are so thankful to have her here in our department and so proud of the patient care and department care she gives, end quote. Randolph's dedication and hard work have not gone unnoticed. Her exceptional care and compassion significantly impact the lives of her patients and colleagues. She continuously goes above and beyond to ensure the well-being and comfort of those she cares for, making her a true asset to the Midland Health team. Please join us in congratulating Randolph on this well-deserved honor. Thank you, Randolph, for your remarkable service and for setting such a high standard for patient care. We are incredibly proud to have you as part of our team. Midland Health serves the community by providing high-quality health care with a focus on compassion, innovation, and excellence. Our dedicated team is committed to improving the health and well-being of those we serve, one patient at a time. Hearing loss. How untreated hearing loss can result in a negative health spiral. Hearing loss often is thought of as a normal part of aging, but recent studies have shown untreated hearing loss can significantly affect overall health. In this Mayo Clinic Minute, Dr. Nicholas Deep, a Mayo Clinic otolaryngologist, explains how untreated hearing loss can affect cognitive, social, and physical health. Quote, we used to think of hearing loss as separate from our overall health, as something that is just a normal part of aging. Everyone gets it. It's not a big deal. But we're learning more that actually untreated hearing loss can result in a negative spiral of other health issues, end quote, says Deep. With greater hearing loss, the brain has to work overtime to interpret the garbled message. That uses up brain power. There's less cognitive reserve for thinking, memory, or other high-level brain functions. Deep says patients get frustrated by their inability to communicate. They may withdraw socially, become less active, and less connected with their friends and family. This can lead to loneliness, social isolation, and depression. These are all independent risk factors for cognitive decline. Social isolation fueled by untreated hearing loss can affect not only a person's mind, but also their body. Quote, they stay at home more. Their physical activities are starting to go down. As a result, their balance is declining. They're at increased risk for falls, which is a huge issue in the elderly. It's not surprising, then, that untreated hearing loss has been a risk factor for increasing risk for falls, hospitalization, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and even mortality, end quote, says Deep. Treating hearing loss with different solutions, such as hearing aids or cochlear implants, can reduce all these risks and improve quality of life. Heart disease. South's high heart disease rates examined. Daryl Dixon's father was just 25 when he had a major heart attack in the rural Mississippi Delta. By his early 40s, a series of additional attacks had left his heart muscle too weak to pump enough blood to his body. He died in 2013 at age 49. Quote, "It was a big jolt for our family," end quote, said Dixon, 36. Quote, "For myself personally, it also got me thinking about heredity. I just wondered whether I was next," end quote. The death spurred Dixon to get involved in an unusual and ambitious new health study. Public health experts from some of the nation's leading research institutions have deployed a massive medical trailer to rural parts of the South to test and survey thousands of residents. The goal, to understand why the rates of heart and lung disease are dramatically higher there than in other parts of the United States. Quote, "This rural health disadvantage, it doesn't matter whether you're white or black, it hurts you," end quote, said Dr. Vasan Ramachandran, a leader of the project who used to oversee the Framingham Heart Study, the nation's longest-running study of heart disease. Quote, "No race is spared, although people of color fare worse," end quote. The researchers aim to test the heart and lung function of roughly 4,600 residents of 10 counties and parishes in Alabama, Kentucky, Louisiana, and Mississippi, while collecting information about their environments, health history, and lifestyles. They're also giving participants a fitness tracker and plan to survey them repeatedly for years to check for any major medical events. Ramachandran, now dean of the University of Texas School of Public Health in San Antonio, said rural populations in the U.S. rarely receive such personal long-term attention from epidemiologists. More than a dozen institutions are helping with the study, including Johns Hopkins University, the University of California, Berkeley, and Duke University. The 52-foot-long, 27-ton trailer is outfitted with instruments that examine calcium in the arteries, the structure of the heart, lung capacity, and other more common health indicators, such as blood pressure and weight. The initial exam can take more than 3 hours. Quote, "They're reaching out and going out into the community in ways that I have not seen before," end quote, said Lynn Spruill, the mayor of Starkville, Mississippi, in Oktabeka County, where the trailer arrived in 2022 and medical staff tested more than 700 people. "Studies and data from U.S. health officials show rural populations in the U.S. are unhealthier and have lower life expectancy than Americans in urban areas. The health disparity is even greater in the South, where mortality rates from heart disease, the leading cause of death in the U.S., for people 35 and older, are more than twice the national average in some rural communities. Lung conditions such as chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which the study is also examining, are also more prevalent in the South. Researchers have multiple theories for the disparity. Hospital closures and physician shortages have left many rural residents with limited access to care. Healthy food, fitness opportunities, and public transit are often scarcer. Poverty rates are higher, and fewer people receive health coverage through their employers. In the rural South, poverty rates and the share of people without health insurance are even greater. Smoking cigarettes is a major cause of heart disease, and at least 20% of adults smoked in Alabama, Kentucky, Louisiana, and Mississippi, according to 2019 data from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Obesity is another factor. In 2022, self-reported height and weight put between 38% and 40% of adults in the four states in the category of obese body mass index. By closely examining residents and their environments, the rural study seeks clear answers about what's driving the additional health burden in the South. Researchers also want to understand what makes some rural counties there much healthier than others. Quote, "We're interested in both the risk but also the resilience piece of it," end quote, said Lindsay Poole, an epidemiologist with the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, which has awarded more than $40 million for the study. To accomplish that goal, researchers are also visiting rural areas with low risk for heart and lung disease in three of the states: Louisiana, Mississippi, and Kentucky, despite similar demographics. Oktabeha County, home to Mississippi State University, in the eastern part of Mississippi, near the Alabama border, is the low-risk location. The researchers are contrasting it with Panola County in northern Mississippi, about 60 miles south of Memphis, Tennessee. Both counties have poverty rates that exceed 20% and a similar and sizable share of people under 65 without health insurance. But between 2019 and 2021, the death rate from heart disease for those 35 and over was 647 per 100,000 people in Panola County, compared with 395 per 100,000 in Oktabeha County, according to CDC data. In more urban Rankin County, Mississippi, part of the Jackson metro area, the figure was 331. The U.S. average over the same period was 326. Dixon, who works in Panola County for a regional development organization and serves as a consultant for the Heart and Lung Study, helped recruit more than 600 Panola County residents for the project. Heart conditions are so prevalent there that it's common to hear people discussing their medications and side effects at local shops and churches, he said. Dixon's father, Daryl Dixon Sr., lived in Clarksdale, about 40 miles west of Panola County. He long suffered from high blood pressure and had a strong family history of heart disease. He had an additional major heart attack after an inmate he had grown close to as chaplain of the Mississippi State Penitentiary was executed, Dixon said, and then spent the last years of his life in and out of the hospital with congestive heart failure. Quote, he really suffered, end quote, Dixon said. He hopes the study will shed light on any unseen environmental factors that may have played a role in his dad's death and raise awareness among local residents about, quote, how to live better, end quote. The trailer is now in Louisiana's northeastern Franklin Parish, where the death rate from heart disease between 2019 and 2021 was a whopping 859 per 100,000 people for those 35 and over, according to the CDC data. About 200 miles south in New Orleans, it was 340. The National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute plans to extend the study to 2031. And researchers hope to examine all the participants in person again. Quote, the longer you can follow people, the more you can understand disease development and progression, end quote, said Poole, the epidemiologist.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.